No event is so terribly well adapted to inspire the supremeness of bodily and of mental distress as his burial before death. The unendurable oppression of the lungs, the silence like a sea. These things with the thoughts of air and grass above, with the memory of dear friends carrying to the heart, which still palpitates a degree of appalling and intolerable horror from which the most daring imagination must recoil. Those are the macabre writings of the late, great Edgar Allan Poe, who for over a century has been frightening audiences worldwide. Like much of the mid-19th century, Poe was just one of the millions that were frightened by the recent spikes in premature burials when many newspaper stories reported corpses that appeared to have shown signs of escape when coffins and tombs were reopened, like damaged fingernails and scratch marks inside of the coffin. Many of these cases being reported were iffy at best, but accounts of almost dead were a common thing, especially during disease epidemics and their processes of quick burials. Premature burials were such a problem that in 1896, the London Association for the Prevention of Premature Burial was started by William Tebb, and with it, so did the inventions of safety coffins, which sometimes featured pipes that would provide air or ringing bells to alert passerbys above the ground of movement below. But premature burials are just one of many forms of dying that scare many of us to death. Various cultures throughout time have had legends of beings or animals that were harbingers of death, birds pecking at windows, and black cats crossing one's path. In Ireland, banshees are female spirits who wailed when someone was about to die. Through time, the legend of the banshee has changed forms, from being once a beautiful woman to being an ugly one surrounded by mutilated bodies. But when it comes to the ultimate fear, death reigns supreme. Death has taken many forms, from large black vulture-like birds attacking headless human corpses to the rider on a pale horse. But none are or were as iconic and nightmare-inducing as a Grim Reaper. A hooded skeletal figure carrying a large scythe. Similar skeletal depictions have existed, such as the 1424 Dance Macabre, the painting on the wall of the Cemetery of the Saints Innocents. But many of these renditions were reminders, memento mori, and not actually a depiction of death itself. So stay tuned as we dive a little deeper into the legends of the Banshee, learn more about the Grim Reaper, and listen to the horror stories of people being buried alive on today's episode. He's talking and I'm not, and I'm just... And then I'm too.
No, but wait, I have something for him.
Boom, you get shot down.
Now you're just fucking me, aren't you?
I'm just wondering why all these people like kids.
The Weird History and Eerie Tales Podcast.
Concentrating on the news. It's what we do.
Wow.
FYI, there's nothing wrong with
liking. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Weird History and Eerie Tales Podcast. I am your host, Moses Soria. With me to my left is Archie. With me to my right is my brother Josh.
Hey!
And today we're going to be talking about something we all fear. Death. Death.
Death? Are you saying death or death?
I'm saying death. D-E-A-T-H.
I swear there's an F in the end.
You're telling me if death. I smoke this, I'll die, motherfucker?
Said death, not death. Yes, today we're going to be talking about death. This episode is going to be an all death thing.
Yep.
All death. All things death, whatever. Today we're going to talk about banshees.
Ah!
Talking about Grim Reapers.
Yep.
And the horrible way to die, being buried
alive.
Oh. I'm
talking about premature burials. So I hope you guys sit back and enjoy the episode.
Now, when I hear Banshee,
I think Halo 2.
I think back to Halo 2.
Yeah.
All right. I think back to Halo, bro.
Get rock launcher, auto lock on that shit, and then bam.
Shoo.
Yep. GG. GG.
But that's not the Banshee we're talking about here. The Banshee that I'm talking about is more of like a wailing woman. And so the Banshee originally has been roaming in the countryside, can be heard wailing when she predicts a death. The word Banshee comes from the Irish being sigh, which is actually pronounced Banshee. So bean, like as in like frijole bean, pinto bean, and then S-I with apostrophe there.
But it's pronounced Banshee.
It's pronounced Banshee.
Nice.
Yeah. And this translates to a woman of the fairy mounds. She can appear in a number of different, you know, appearances. As a young, beautiful woman, as a stately matron, or as an ugly, frightening hag. And she is usually dressed in a gray or white hooded cloak. While not always seen, her mourning cries can be heard usually at night when someone is about to die. And those who claim to have seen her describe long hair, which she runs a comb through, similar to tearing the hair out of anguish.
So she is not a harbinger of death, but she kind of tells you. So she's kind of like the person, the thing that tells you someone's going to.
Yeah.
Hey, yo, bitch. You about to die.
So where did these Banshee come from? The origin of the Banshee is really quite ordinary compared to the tales that surround her.
Mm-hmm.
Medieval times, during funerals, a woman would take on the role of what's called a keener. And keeners sang sad songs. And this was good business to be made as a keener, as families would pay very well for a talented one. The best known ones attended funerals at the biggest, and the most well-known people were very much sought after. As for more people mourning at the funeral, the greater the person was said to be. For the most powerful families, it was common belief that the Banshee, or the fairy woman, would come to keen at the grave. Fairies presumably being more talented singers than human, the Irish phrase became angelicized to Banshee. And over time, the stories developed and morphed into what we know today. The fact that the keeners were paid in alcohol and often ended up elderly alcoholic women that was banished from the towns and villages also adds to the myth.
Bro, is this how black metal started? This sounds very black metal. They hire someone to sing in someone's...
Yeah.
Bro.
That's how it started.
That's amazing. Transferring
hunger all day.
And so, origins from Ireland. Irish. This is an Irish myth.
Come on. True Ireland black metal.
Fucking true.
It's all true. They don't use instruments. It's just vocals. It's just
freaking wailing. And many books of Irish fairy stories say that Banshees were particularly associated with families whose names had O or Mac in the start. However, that doesn't tell us much, particularly that every family name in Ireland that starts with an O or a Mac. On the other hand, some legends claim that they only cry for five major families. So Banshees are selective as to who they cry for. And some of the most common families that they do cry for are the O'Neills.
I was going to say O'Reilly's.
Fuck. The O'Briens.
The McDonald's.
The O'Cotters.
Oh.
The O'Grady's. And the Kavanaughs.
The what?
Kavanaughs.
Kavanaughs?
Yeah. Kavanaughs.
So, damn, all right.
Yeah. The great O'Brien family were said to be frequented by a Banshee with the name Evil, which sounds too much like evil. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Who ruled 25 other Banshees that followed her wherever she went.
What the fuck?
She had a whole
squad, bro? Gang, gang, bro?
She was like, ah, ah.
And then they all,
everybody's winning, bro.
So, hold on. So you're telling me this Banshee, who is probably looking, her form is probably the hag one.
Yeah.
Her name is Evil?
Yep.
Oh my
God. Evil spelled E-E-V-O-U-L.
Bro, this sounds so black metal.
Evil.
And this gave the rise to the belief that several Banshees were heard at once. And it meant to be the imminent death of someone very powerful.
Bro, her shriek, I swear to God, if her shrieking doesn't sound like Danny Filth from Cradle of Filth. That's how I
Man, you fucking wish, bro.
The O'Donnell family's banshee apparently lived on a rock overlooking the sea of Deluce, of the Deluce Castle.
Oh, that sounds metal as fuck already.
Oh, hell yeah. I own a banshee that looks over the
over the Deluce Castle.
Of a castle, bro.
Overlooking the sea at the Deluce Castle.
At the Deluge.
And she cried not specifically for one death, but for all the misfortunes the family has ever had and ever will have. The O'Neill's banshees will cry out from the Coleth Ugta, which is, I guess, somewhere in the woods over there, that could be heard from the other side of the Loch Neth, where the castle stood. Her name was Maven, and she even had a special room set aside for her in the castle.
Damn. The banshee?
The banshee had a room.
Man, what the fuck?
No rent paid.
Free?
Free.
Just free.
Rent free.
Rent well, not free. For
it. She's singing forever.
Oh, there you go.
She's a work for hire. She just lives at work.
There are two contradictory reasons why the banshees follow these great families. Some believe that they did so purely to bring misery on them with the insane wailing. While others believe that she was a friend of the family who was utterly distraught at their having lost someone they loved. Like I mentioned earlier, there's been lots of like depictions of the banshees, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so despite the folklore, banshees have been depicted as really gruesome monsters, mm-hmm. powerful beings, whose well is said to hold significant power. Some shows and comics depict the power of the well to kind of shatter glass, to hold up an eerie, paralyzing screen that like stops their foe, or like, you know, freaking super huge, painful ears yeah. that they can't do shit.
Yeah.
And some of them even blow their foes up into the air.
Bro, in D&D, if you hear a banshee, you automatically, your character dies. You don't even get a death Ooh. Save. You just die. Just rip your character sheet up. Start rolling for a new one. Her wailing, which she can only use once per turn.
Yeah.
I mean, once per day. She kills any character that hears it. So, I would place some banshees like around like certain places. I think you guys battled a banshee once and you guys rolled to see if you guys were far enough.
Can you beat a banshee in the game?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's not strong, but that's her thing though. Like, if she surprise attacks you,
yeah.
GG. Your character's dead forever.
See?
Forever.
Yeah, so like the whole idea of the banshee has really been manipulated. Especially since from what I was reading, they're not meant to harm. They're not meant to like really like go out and if you see when you die.
Yeah, it's not really like ominous type of. Yeah.
They're just like the harbingers of doom. They're just like they tell you something's coming.
Uh-huh.
You're about to die, motherfucker.
Great misfortune or someone's going to die.
Surprise, motherfucker. Yeah.
And so there are variations of the banshee though. Not many, but there are a few. The banshee was, like I mentioned, in a traditional form, relatively harmless. Apart from the dread people felt at hearing her cry, the other fearsome activities seemed to get up to where she would actually knock on the doors or on the windows.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's a legend that her sister spirit, the Lianhan Sid, or the Sweetheart Fairy, was somewhat more malicious. She sought for the love of mortal men, and their desire for her was so intense that they were driven to madness and ultimately destroyed. So it's almost like, you know, like the mermaids of the sea?
Yeah.
Where like they're like bringing
the sirens. The whole sirens.
Yeah. Something similar to that. And the also more similar manifestation of the banshee is known as the B9 or the washing woman. And although this is more attributed to Scottish folklore than Irish, instead of wailing and crying at the night to warn someone of the death, she would instead wash the bloody clothes of the person that was about to meet their doom in the local water source. Her appearance was generally thought to be the same, although she was sometimes washing her own bloody clothes instead of someone else's.
All right.
So instead of like crying out, you would see her like washing bloody clothes.
I'd rather do that. Like, is that my shirt? Fuck, I'm dying.
Dead.
Fuck. Hey, would you consider now that we're going into deeper into the banshee lore?
Yeah.
Would you consider like Yorona a banshee?
We were talking about that earlier.
Earlier, yeah.
Basically, because it's a banshee is just a wailing woman, and the Yorona, what she do?
She wails.
She wails. She's wailing for her children.
She wails. But motherfucker.
But like in the traditional sense, no.
No, because the Yorona.
Yeah, because
well, she'll attack.
Yeah, she's like, oh, yeah. I miss you, hoes. And then like, if you're not, and you fucking die.
So,
you know, you drown. Yeah,
you're fucking dead.
Dead.
Yeah. D-E-D, dead.
Yeah. I think I attribute it more to, like, her more to, like, the Dungeons & Dragons version. And then you brought up this of, like, what's the difference between, like, a Will-O-Wisp and the B9 and the Banshee?
Uh-huh.
Well, traditionally, like I mentioned, the Banshee is a relatively harmless being. The B9, similar, except instead of wailing, washes the clothes. But the Will-O-Wisp, on the other hand, that's a different story.
Those go after you.
Yeah. According to most legends, the Will-O-Wisp initially appear harmless or even playful. Because it's basically just like a light that's kind of like hovering.
Yeah, like a little fireball.
Yeah. But this is what they use as a dirty trick. They're really malevolent, and it is said and served as a device to lure travelers off to a beaten path and into danger. On the other hand, some stories claim the Will-O-Wisp lead them to a fairy kingdom, so it's kind of like a 50-50 shot.
A what? A fairy kingdom?
A fairy kingdom, bro.
A fair or so, fairy?
Fairy.
Fairy.
A fairy kingdom.
So either you're partying with the sparkle people, right?
Yeah.
Or you're going to meet your certain death.
Hey, man, you think fairies got some good brew?
Nah,
some fairy like brew, some fairy look.
They got some good cocaine.
It's a dry kingdom.
I'm pretty sure they're like elves. They don't party.
Nah, but they have wine though. They got drinks.
I doubt it.
They got fairy dust, cocaine.
Fuck shit! Sign me up real quick, bro. Take me to carry. I mean, the fairy kingdom, bro.
Yeah. But basically, that's what it is. It's just like they're just little balls of light that trick you into like, taking you to danger.
And there's no like depiction of like, oh, that's a good little firelight, or that's a bad firelight.
Like they'll be like, the good one's the blue and the bad one's red.
Yeah. Nah, you just gotta flip a coin and be like, fuck it.
Yeah.
If basically. I die, I die.
If you die, you
bro.
Die, bro.
And whatever. It's either I'm getting fairy dusted or
and you know what? Like how you said, bro.
Yeah, what's up?
Whatever's fucked,
can't get unfucked.
Oh, what's fucked? Cannot get unfucked.
Yeah, that was also one of our yokai things, right? Like one of the Ninetales Pokemon.
Yeah.
It would be able to turn into a fireball. Uh-huh, and if it would be a mischievous one, it would guide you into like, it would lose you or like off a cliff.
Uh-huh. There you go. You can't unfucked what's been fucked. There
it
is. There you go. I was like, it's signing off. It's signing off.
Yeah.
You can't unfucked what's been fucked.
Yeah, it's been a while since we said that. Same.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it's been a cool minute.
That's the angel of death, the harbinger of death, the
banshee.
The banshee.
The fucking banshees, bro. Fairy kingdom, bro. Fairy dust. Sign me up, bro.
Take it to Disneyland, and that'll be the worst thing. You show up, and the tickets are $200. You're like, fuck, I ain't got money.
That's your danger.
That's your danger? That's a fucking fire one?
Debt.
Debt. Not death. Death. Isn't that from Cat William? His stand-up?
No, I'm talking debt.
Oh, debt.
Debt, bro.
Debt. You go to McDonald's, you're in debt, bro.
As humans, we tend to want to understand everything, whether it's fucking science or whatever, and especially death.
Especially if you're a fucking American, you want to classify every fucking thing.
Exactly. So we try to study, we try to rationalize with it, right? Or sometimes it gets too fucking hard, too complex, and we just ignore it. We're like, all right, fuck it. Mm. If I die, I die. Yeah, but how do you understand somebody that's so natural like this? How do you, right? You try to reason with it, you try to understand, try to study, but what's the best way to start to understand what death really is?
Mm.
And the best way to do that, to start it, is to give it a silhouette or a body form. Can you imagine what death is? What death looks like?
The Grim Reaper is what I have in my head, bro.
Yeah, well, there's different cultures with different images of what death is or who death really is.
Why one of them be a fluffy bunny?
It could be, bro. What if you're deathly allergic to fucking bunny fur? That's it. You're GG.
It's a bunny, bro.
That's for you, bro. Some people are fucking allergic to peanut butter. Death to them looks like a fucking
the fucking peanut guy. The fuck's his name?
Oh, dude. the peanut dude.
Yeah, the fucking with the bougie ass fucking. Oh shit!
The monocle.
Yeah, there it is. And yeah, so these cultures literally create personifications of death. Mm-hmm. Now let's start off with the pantheon of Greek mythology, right? So that's one of the first personifications of death, of what culture created a picture or body form of death. And this Greek god is known as Thanatos. And Thanatos comes from the term Thanesco, which literally means to die. He's a son, fun fact, he's a son of Nyx, which is aka the night, and Erebus, aka the darkness. So Thanatos is the son of these motherfucking gods.
And his thing is to go around the universe and collect these 5 Infinity Stones that he needs to put on an Infinity Gauntlet.
He didn't say Thanos, bro.
See, the difference between like other different cultures of how they view death, mm-hmm. Thanatos is not a gruesome banshee or a fucking hag. No. Thanatos is a fucking sexy motherfucker. He's an attractive dude with the wing. He is a good looking cat, bro.
Immediately goes to Google.com.
You didn't even hesitate, bro.
Really?
Bookmark this for later.
Yep. Not only is he, bookmark for later, you sick fuck. You got material or what? So it's this attractive dude with wings, and he carries around this fucking torch that's not lit anymore. And there's a reason behind that, because Thanatos is considered to be a guide, so to speak, a guide for the souls to a different realm, or in this case, in this pantheon, Hades or the underworld.
Also, he's the ferryman from...
Yeah. And this category of death is it's known as a psychopomps, I think. Yeah, psychopomps. So any death figures or creatures or whatever that guides souls, whether it's to the underworld or it's to another place, being whatever realm, they're considered under this category, psychopomps. Mm. And this is what Thanatos is all about. Which literally the meaning is a guide of souls. And like I said, it's a transition from one realm to the next. Mm-hmm. So the afterlife in Greek mythology, like I stated, was underworld and Hades. And it was a very neutral place. Now, most people think Hades or, this place is like hell. But it's not. It's what they like to call a neutral place. It's not good, nor it's bad.
It's like Palm Springs.
Yeah.
It's like kind of hot, but not too hot. It's like whatever.
I want to see you just stay there. Tell me it's not that hot. No AC.
Oh. No AC, bro. This was dead.
This was dead, bro. This is Mr. Freeze, bro.
What's your death figure? Fucking the sun?
The sun?
The fucking sun?
A hot monster. A monster that was left out in the sun.
Oh, fuck.
That's death.
So for Greeks, death was a peaceful passage into the eternal slumber. That's it for the Greek mythology, for the culture in Greece.
So for them, death wasn't a end-all, be-all,
grim.
Like, oh, it's gone forever, but death is like, oh, he's going to take me from where the next stage in life, whether it's Hades or Palm Springs is Hades. All right.
Up next, we have India, and this death depiction has a name known as Yama, and is the Hindu god of death, and is a judge of souls in the afterlife. Now, here's a quick description of what Yama looks like. He's either depicted as having blue or green skin. He's dressed often in red robes and has red eyes. Overall, he just looks like a bougie-ass motherfucker. He's just flexing, bro. He looks fly as fuck.
Red on red.
So when you look at him, you're like, all right, this dude doesn't look scary.
Yeah.
But what is scary?
Oh.
When you do die.
Oh.
Right? You show up to in front of his palace, bro. Not a house. Not a mansion. Not a palace, bro.
Right.
And you stand in front of him. And then once you're in front of him, he's going to judge your bitch ass. Oh. How does he do? Yeah. He gets a book, essentially, of all the bullshit and good deeds you've done while being alive. And depending on how many good deeds or bullshit you've been doing, you either get rewarded or you get punished.
Imagine being right at that brink where it's just like, all right, you got 50 good deeds.
He's like, sir, you would have made it to heaven, but on November 12th, you went to the liquor store while wearing socks and sandals. So, to hell you go.
No!
50 Damn. Good.
It was hot that day.
51 bad.
Those sandals had no more soul.
Hey, bro, we're not doing a freaking round table. Chill with your freaking puns, bro.
Man. Fuck riddles. That's all I got to say, bro. Fuck them all, bro. Whoever enjoys riddles, bro, you... Anywho, like I stated, Yama can make a decision whether the person is worthy of reward or punishment. A person so can be banished to one of the 21 hells. That's your punishment.
One of the 21 hells?
21 hells, bro. Fuck. What are these 21 hells? We don't know. I don't know. For next episode.
Hells. One of them is one of the hells is just
a bunch of banshees crying.
All you're gonna get fed is Popeye's biscuits with nothing to drink.
Oh, nothing to drink.
Nothing to drink.
Can't drink my own blood.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Damn. Nothing. Not even piss. I can't.
Nope.
No liquids.
The second hell is you're in a room with an unplugged AC.
Oh. Well, anywho. Well, if you're given a reward, you could be given immortality in Yama's kingdom. Or be reborn as another being to be given another chance at living a good life. Mm-hmm. So if you have a shitty life, but you were a good person, you did good deeds.
Try again.
He's like, try again, motherfucker.
All right.
But would you want to try again?
You want to relive?
Yeah. Knowing you had a shitty life, oh, finally, right? I could live and just be immortal here in your kingdom. And he's like, or you could go back and try again.
I'll try again.
Would you try again?
I'll do it.
You'll do it.
I want to see what was up for me the next time.
Your wild card, bro?
Wild card.
Fuck yeah, wild card, bitch.
You get to try again, but it doesn't mean you get to try again at the same time.
Yeah.
What if in those 2 minutes you're in there, it's been like 200 years, mm-hmm. So you get revived in a born where like now it's flying cars.
The lifetime, bro.
Yeah. Well, you get a revive to a new level.
Doesn't mean you're OP, though.
Who says OP? You weren't OP before, you mean it?
You dead. That's why you died the first
time. Hold on. Do you get to retry with knowing you're retrying? Or is it one of those things where like you get revived and you have no idea?
Just blank memory. I'm pretty sure it's that one.
With blank memory?
Yeah.
No, I'm staying in the kingdom.
Overall, Yama is not necessarily a malevolent god, right? Mm-hmm. Right. He's not going to choose your fate. You technically choose your own fate, depending on how you lived your life.
Right.
Whether you're a piece of shit, you get punished. If you're a saint, a good person, a decent person, you get rewarded.
Right.
You got options, motherfucker. You stay in my crib, or you go back down and try again.
Level 2.
Yeah. So that's it for the Hindu pantheon and the India culture. Moving on, I'm going to touch up a little bit more on the Irish. Just a little sprinkle on it.
A little sprinkle.
So in Irish mythology, death is foretold by the female spirit called a banshee, like you stated, banshee. The name comes from an old Irish bentside, meaning woman of the fairy mound.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the early references to the banshees come from the 14th century in Ireland. Some say the myth comes from an old tradition where a woman would sing, or more specifically, keen, well in grief, like stated in your part during funerals. Thus, a banshee was a fairy singer mourning the death of a person. The idea of the banshee today is that it is an old, terrified woman with silver hair and ragged clothes that screeches as an omen of death. That's modern depiction of a banshee. Now, back then, it was different, like stated in your little part. But death has been a very common part of Irish lives over the centuries because of war and famine and all sorts of shit. So they're like, hey, we got to create a depiction of death. And they went with a banshee. And throughout time, the banshee evolved to a more terrifying figure over time.
Cool.
Sheesh. And that's pretty much for the Irish culture. Moving on. We asked ourselves. I am going to talk about the Grim Reaper. But does the skeleton symbol of death need to be so grim and scary? Right? You would think. But no. And that's proven with what's known as La Calavera Catrina, which literally translates to the skull Catrina, but is sometimes called the Dapper Skeleton. We all have seen the skeleton before.
The Dapper Skeleton?
Yep. The personification of death in Mexican culture can be traced back to the Aztec death goddess known as the Mictlantecuhtli. But the modern Catrina was inspired specifically by an etching by Jose Guadalupe Posada in the early 20th century. La Catrina forms a strong contrast to the Grim Reaper, in which I will talk about later on, as she wears bright and colorful clothing and is far less threatening than the Grim Reaper. She's now especially associated with Dia de los Muertos. This is what we see, the colorful skull, all the colorful Dia de los Muertos skeletons that she's referred to, La Catrina, Calavera. But the Aztec goddess, she looks completely different. Again, the Dia de los Muertos, for those who don't know what that is, the translation, it's a day of the dead. Today, La Catrina is understood as a tribute to Mexico's unique, intimate relationship with death. Right? When it comes to that, we have our own altar of our closest family members that passed away. Do you guys set that up too in your house when it comes to Dia de los Muertos?
Not really.
No?
No.
No.
Which is surprising because I was fucking born on the Day of the Dead.
Oh, you are, huh?
Yeah, bro. Yeah. November
2nd. November 2nd. See, your family don't celebrate that. They celebrate life. I like that. I mean, it's yours, but... Yeah.
And like for those who don't know, the whole Day of the Day of the Dead celebration shows the closeness with one's deceased relatives, like I stated, that doesn't exist in other countries. That's what's special about this. It's like Mexico is like technically the only country that celebrates a day like that where we actually celebrate joyness and more intimacy with our deceased.
And we're okay with death.
Yeah.
We accept it.
I mean.
Yeah.
But then again, when it comes to funerals... Shit's expensive, bro.
Well, don't die.
Just don't die.
Don't die, stupid.
Don't die. You don't have to worry about it.
Don't die, stupid.
Hey, fucking don't die, stupid. See, but you're going to die twice now, bro. That chance, bro. With Yama, try to live another life.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to die again. You want to die again?
Fuck it.
That's two funerals, bro.
You know what? Just fucking incinerate my ass. Just put me up in the fucking...
What was
Frank Reynolds?
Yeah,
just throw me in the trash. I don't care. I'm dead. I'm dead anyways.
Oh shit!
Like, what do I care? I'm dead.
Yeah, I'm dead. So moving on to the Grim Reaper, which is the idea of angel of death that essentially has existed in Europe for a very, very long time. But the Grim Reaper, arguably, is the most famous depiction of death. When you think of death, you think of the Grim Reaper. Now, this image of the Grim Reaper, as we all know, was born during one of the most catastrophic times of human history, which is known the Black Plague of the 14th century.
Ooh.
During this period, millions and millions and millions of people were dying, and nobody could figure out why. So it's not a surprise that death was on everyone's mind. Skeletons that can move and dance became a common motif in art during the time, and so became the most common shorthand for death. The Grim Reaper comes a number of other symbols for death. In most modern depictions, it carries a scythe, though originally it had also been crossbow, darts, or other weapons. But there's a meaning why we see
the scythe
on a Grim Reaper instead of a fucking dart or a crossbow. There's a meaning behind the scythe. Mm. And this is why. The scythe makes an important shift because it's a harvest tool rather than a weapon, meaning that death may have been seen more as a natural event rather than the violent one. And there's more to it. But here's the description of death. Then there's a black cloak, which is generally associated with death and mourning in our Western culture. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, the Grim Reaper is mostly commonly seen in horror movies and Halloween decorations, which in itself says a lot about when it's acceptable to think about or reference death in modern culture. But why the skeletal figure? Why the scythe? Why the robe? Skeletal figure obviously was because of all the body and corpses that were left over from the Black Plague. Nothing but skeletons, bodies, just decaying all over around. Why the scythe? Well, now the scythe is an apt image taken from agricultural practices of the time. Harvesters used scythes to reap or harvest crops that were ready to be plucked from earth. And well, that being said, this happens when humans die.
Oh.
We are plucked from this earth.
It's a Grim Reaper.
So this is a Grim Reaper.
It could also be known as the Harvester.
Yeah, the Harvester.
Doom. The Harvester of Doom? Bro.
Or souls. Either way.
He's looking at us like weeds. Like, let me just clip that.
That's exactly what it was. Because he was killing millions and it was like going through a field. Just.
You know what?
You think he was vibing to a song while doing this shit? You think he vibes to songs, bro?
I mean, the only song he was probably vibing to was like songs that were out. Of the
Banshees or what?
Banshees are like, yeah. You know what? He was probably fucking vibing to that, to our intro, Dance Macabre. That's just been around since that time.
You think Grim Reaper fucked the Banshee before?
No.
I feel like he's too busy.
He's too career oriented. He's not worried about distractions or like fucking netherworld thoughts.
You know what?
He's just, I'm doing my job, and that's it. He ain't the Family Guy Grim Reaper. I can picture the Family Guy Grim Reaper fucking a Banshee.
That's true.
I'm gonna fuck a Banshee. Nah, I'm gonna fuck your day up. Your mom dead. Your mama died. Oh, look, your dog died too.
Touching my Xbox?
Oh, you just walking around your house.
He touched my Xbox? I'm throwing hands, bro. Second I touch him, I'm dead, but fuck you. I got that one hit on him, bro.
Death's like, all these kids are not doing drugs anymore. Now they're just playing Gears of War. I got to fuck their day up. Just going to houses.
He has a master key. Fucking fucks up all Xboxes. Hell no. But anywho, moving on. It is believed that this entity escorts souls from deceased to the unknown territory, of life after death, whether it's hell, heaven, depending on the culture and depending on the religion. While some believe that he arrives on the old coach drawn by white horses. Other believes he arrives on a single horse without any coaches. His skeletal face bears a grim expression that successfully haunts a number of people, instilling the never-ending fear of death and departure. Funny enough, some people might think that the Reaper is a badass assassin, bro. He's despicable because he ends life without so much of a flinch. You dead.
Like, he's cheating, bro, because no one can kill death, so he's going to go in there all cocky as fuck. I walk into a room like I'm the chef. I'm in charge of killing people, and nothing's going to kill me. I ain't scared of nobody. I'll probably be scared of John Wick, though. John Wick, maybe. John Wick.
He's on the list. John Wick. He's like, oh, well, I'm going to avoid that.
He just flips the page.
I just got this job. And
he's like, all right, let's see who's today's. See, who's tomorrow's day.
Today is John Wick's dog. You know what? I'm calling it sick today.
John Wick's dog. Oh, shit.
I'm not feeling good.
I'm going to take a day off today.
I'm taking my day off.
I'm sick.
But of course, there's an important difference between an assassin and death himself. Assassins kill people without caring about their fate. The Reaper kills people because it is their fate to die. In many ways, his work is beneficial. He ends suffering, guides souls, and maintains the balance of nature.
Oh, he's one of those. I'm just doing my job. I'm just following orders, bro.
You just said. He's not fucking around fucking banshees. He's doing his job, bro. He's by the books.
Yeah, but.
He's by the books.
I could contradict myself. It's okay. I'll just edit the other part out.
But if I contradict myself,
stays in the episode.
Yeah.
It's gonna be the intro.
Damn. Just a fucking loop. Yeah, but that's pretty much a little sprinkle of different cultures on how they imagine death.
Do you think there will be a more... Is there a more perfect version, like vision of death than the Grim Reaper?
I mean, that's kind of unfair because
the personification of death.
Yeah.
Like,
because Grim Reaper is just
When you think like, all right, put a face to death. What is it?
Well, yeah, it's Grim Reaper, but that's like unfair because that's what we were raised to think. Right, early on, that's what I was like shown and told how death.
No, I mean, we grew up Catholic. We grew up believing in Jesus Christ, but I still think Thor's a better god than Jesus Christ. Thor looks badass. Jesus Christ is just, you know, he got Mjolnir.
He needs a hammer.
Yeah. He got hammered to the cross. Oh, no.
Damn!
One day last week, a most unpleasant occurrence took place at the Union Burial Ground in Southwark. A young woman, about 19 years of age, having, as it was supposed, died suddenly the night before of cramps in the stomach, was brought to be interred. After the relatives and friends had left the ground, the person filling the grave, after having thrown several shovels full of earth upon the coffin, heard a deep groan proceeding from the grave. He immediately obtained assistance and got the coffin out and opened it. When it appeared that the young woman had turned to her side and blood was issuing from her mouth and nostrils. Medical aid was procured, but without avail, as it appeared that life was extinct. This most unfortunate instance of premature interment should be a warning against too early a burial and any case where death is sudden or only preceded by a short illness. It is to be feared that too many instances of this kind occur. Ones that are never discovered. To most horror nerds and fans of the macabre, when they hear premature burials, they will most likely think of Edgar Allan Poe's story of the same name, even though there have been cases, numerous cases of this actually happening in real life.
Suck.
Since medicine back in the day was kind of a guessing game and really in its infancy, doctors had to rely on their usual tricks to see if someone was dead. Most famously, the whole breath fogging up the pocket mirror. You know how that in the old days, if they want to check someone's dead, they'd take a mirror and put it up to someone's nose to see if it fogs up. Yeah. It fogs up, right? They're still alive. That was the way they could check.
Really?
Yeah. It's either that or check the heartbeat. But, you know, sometimes the heartbeat's too slow, so they can't check it. So yeah. They're like, all right. Use the mirror. They put the mirror on their nose. Fogged up, right? He's still alive. If it doesn't fog up, all right, he's dead. That was a way to check if you were dead or alive.
I'm going to use that shit.
And considering how some medical conditions can mimic death, like the cardiac arrest, alcohol intoxication, you can get too drunk to the point where your heartbeat's going to slow the fuck down. You get overdose on sedatives, deep anesthesia, hypothermia, hypoglycemia, even being put in a coma, sometimes could look like being dead. Mistakes were easily made. And this was a particular problem for Jewish and Islamic families, since their traditions called for their bodies to be buried ASAP. So what if someone's, you know, what if you're of Jewish descent and you go into cardiac arrest and your heartbeat slows down? And they put the mirror to your nose. He's not breathing. All right, that means he's dead. But you're not really dead. Your heartbeat's just really slow. They in the Jewish, you know, Jewish and Islamic families, the traditions are bury them as soon as they die.
Right.
So a lot of people will get fucking really, buried
as
alive.
As soon as you clock out, they're like, "Yo, as soon as you clock out,
you're going home."
Yeah, you're going 6 feet under.
And even though they were rare, cases of premature burial did actually happen. It happened frequent enough that they helped sell newspapers.
Now, I'm assuming they found out because of survivors that were premature buried? How would they know?
We're going to find out.
Oh, okay. I'm going to shut the fuck up now. Let you finish your segment. My bad, bro.
So it happened frequent enough that they did help sell newspapers and showed by how popular Poe's story really was. How real the fear of being buried alive really was. It was also enough of a problem that there's even a medical term for it. It's called taphophobia, which means the irrational fear of being buried alive.
Taphophobia?
That's a freaking...
Taphophobia.
That's scary, bro. I went under the house.
Specific fear.
Yesterday?
You went under the house?
Yeah, that shit was... Bro, I felt like throwing up,
What are you doing under there?
Well, we thought fucking pipe broke down.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, I just put half of my body in.
I thought you were looking for a dead body.
Yeah, fucking no. Why? Why would I look dead body down there?
Dead body disposal.
Dead body disposal.
So, it was during the same period where books were being written describing all the different accounts of people being buried alive. One of these authors, M.H. Lagerne, went as far as claiming that over 1,500 people a year were being premature buried.
1,500?
A year.
They're like, you know what?
Where?
I think there's a pattern going on.
Wait, she assumed? Or those are the numbers of people?
Those are the numbers he went and said were being buried per year. Where? How he got these numbers? Nobody knows. That's what he's saying. Premature burials became so popular during the 19th century that Lou Gern, this author, was able to read a paper that he wrote during a meeting of the Paris Academy of Sciences, where he demanded that the French government put up guidelines and security measures to try and stop and slow down these premature number, these premature burial numbers. So, for example, let's say you made a fortune being a leecher. And a leecher is someone who owned leeches and would lend them to doctors to bleed patients. So, a family member of yours died, and you had pretty, and you had money, so you could spend a pretty penny. Well, what would you do? You would buy a device called the Bateson Life Revival Device, or a.k.a. the Belton's Belfry. And this is what it is. This was a coffin with a bell and a small tower that stuck out of the ground that was attached to the lid of the coffin. So basically, the rope of the bell went down into the coffin where the buried person was, and when the buried person would wake up, he'd freak out and ring the bell and would summon help.
Yeah. Shit.
That was a coffin that you could buy. Sure. This coffin was mainly built to be used before being buried. They made this coffin to be used before being buried, because remember, there was a wake, and wakes usually last 3 days, and then it lasts the day of the funeral. So if someone's being buried alive, they'd probably get awoken in those 4 days.
Yeah, it's a time frame.
Right?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But the main problem with this is, who in the fuck would actually respond to a bell being rung in a graveyard by someone 6 feet in the ground? If you're walking in the graveyard, let's say you and, you know, you and your fiance Sonia, because, all right, you know, let's just walk this graveyard, and suddenly this fucking, the cemetery, and suddenly this tombstone starts ringing a
ring,
bell.
Ring, ring, ring.
Are you gonna, what are you, I'm gonna fucking run the fucking opposite direction. I ain't helping this fucker out.
I mean, how fresh is that graveyard?
You don't know.
There's all like.
Well, let's say it's 4 days.
Damn. Would you do it? Would you start digging?
Knowing this story, yes. But I had no fucking clue about the reason why this is a thing. I just started hearing freaking bells ringing from a graveyard. I would fucking run.
Hello?
Yeah, you're right.
Hello, is this Mythbusters? But let's say you were poor and you couldn't afford one of these boss-ass coffins.
Wait, are you saying this like an imaginary world? Because it's actually pretty factual.
Shut right. your poor ass up.
All right, so let's say,
why'd I kill the vibe like that? Right,
so let's
bro.
Say you're Achi and you're poor. You couldn't afford these coffins.
This
the medical staff in charge of the burial still had measures to try and see if you were still alive.
Ooh, slap him.
So for example, close. Some doctors wouldn't even bother prepping for a funeral until the body started to decay. They're like, look, we're not even going to put him in a coffin. We'll just wait until the body to decay to make sure this person's dead. Because if your body's decaying, that means you're dead. Another measure mm-hmm. was tickling of the nose. So they tickle your nose with a feather, and if you giggle, all right, this person's alive. Right. If you didn't giggle, you're dead.
This guy's like really trying to hold himself.
Thrusting a pencil up the nose was another. That's sure to wake you up.
No. Yeah.
You ain't faking that one.
It was a COVID test before the COVID test.
Oh, shit.
Yelling into the ears was one.
You think there was a specific job? Like, one dude was in charge to do all this bullshit?
Like, hey, call Josh.
Hey, bro,
hey,
sign me up, bro. Sign me up.
Big ass pencil.
Sign me up, bro. Easiest job in the world.
All day he's just sharpening the pencil.
Oh, hell.
I don't have to sharpen that shit. The fuck?
But, all right, whatever.
What's wrong with you?
Stab his brain.
Another one was.
I'm gonna kill that. If he ain't dead, he's going to be dead for sure.
Another one was rubbing the gums with garlic.
Huh.
With garlic?
I don't know.
I read the shit. I wrote it down and, you know.
But it didn't end there.
Oh, shit. There's more.
Sometimes, if a doctor suspected that the corpse was still alive,
uh-huh.
they would resort to what they would call odd practices, which was basically torture.
Oh, butt plugs.
Close.
Oh, I was close.
One of the things they would do is they would put red hot irons to the sole of the feet.
Oh, hell no.
They'll cut the soul with a razor.
Oh! In between the fucking toes or what? Little paper cuts?
They would stick needles into the toenails.
Ooh! What the hell, bro?
And one French doctor was known to put a red hot poker up the butt.
A what?
A red hot poker?
Poker.
Oh, what like, those poker? Like those things.
Those that, sticks that you put fireplace? in the fireplace? To move the fire?
Oh, yeah. What? Put up his butt?
And during the 19th century,
who the fuck thought about all these ideas? They're like, you know what? Let's try this.
I mean, that was medicine back then. Let's try this.
This is our one opportunity. Let's try it.
The nipple pincher was invented for this exact situation.
Shit, sign me up, bro. Dude, I'm pinching all the nipples,
whoever,
bro.
Whoever came up with all these fucking inventions was fucking kinky.
They were horny as fuck. They were horny at work. Like, all right, so hey, how?
What if we stick up a poker up his ass?
Make sure it's all right,
guys,
hot.
We need ideas. We're burying too many people alive. All right, Eric, what do you got?
Why don't we just fuck with their feet?
What?
Yeah, let's just mess with their feet.
Yeah, just
what do you mean?
Why don't we just cut their feet open, man. Just feet.
Like, all right. Anybody
the fuck
else?
Hired this guy? I like this guy.
He's not even conducting these shit. He's just like in the background.
Anybody else? Someone's like, anybody else? Everyone's kind of quiet. Someone just passed through the door.
Play with their nipples.
What?
Just play with their nipples.
I just fucking pinch your tits.
What do you mean? What?
I mean, I ain't no doctor, but hey, that'll wake me up.
Just pinch their nipples. If they're alive, they're going to wake up. Trust me. Just pinch their nipples.
But yeah, during the 19th century, the nipple pincher was invented for this exact reason.
Is there a picture of that? You got a picture of that?
I mean, basically, this is just a giant...
With some dude just pinching nipples?
Just giant tweezers that were just used to pinch the needles of any corpse. And the giant... tweezers were hooked to a battery and they'll just shock them back to life.
Fuck.
You sharking some fucking titties, bro?
And although these safety
measures
were placed for this occasion of premature burial, there really isn't a lot of evidence of many of these methods being used. These were literally written down and were said official. But a lot of these weren't being used because either doctors didn't say it or family wasn't willing to admit that they placed jumper cables on the grandfather's nipples to see if he was really dead.
Fuck.
But many jurisdictions and towns and things of this nature took this job seriously of trying not to bury people alive. Like in Germany, for example, a waiting house was a thing. A waiting house could be found in almost every town and city. And then in this house, there would put the dead body to be stored for a few days until the body started to rot. And just to make sure the body was dead, many of these houses installed steam pipes to speed up the rotting process. Mm. So they're like, look, we don't want to bury people alive, so just put them in this house. Basically, a sauna, they'll just fucking put steam inside and make sure the body rots faster. They're like, all right, rotten, now we can bury it. But due to the advancement of science and the widespread use of embalming, which is the process of preserving the body to delay the natural breakdown of cells, which begins when someone dies, premature burials have been kind of eliminated. Sure, there's still the occasional news story here and there, but overall, the fear of premature burial should be laid to rest. Premature burials were a thing. It's just wild. I mean, it didn't happen a lot. But there are actual cases of people being buried alive. And here are some of the most famous cases.
Oh, all right.
The first one up Virginia McDonald.
Virginia McDonald?
1851.
All right.
You know that gut feeling we get when we know something is up or wrong, but don't really have any proof of it? You're like, something's up, but I can't fucking prove it. So Virginia McDonald died and was buried in Brooklyn, but after her funeral, something told her mom that she was not dead. Nobody believed her, and they just chalked it up to the denial of Virginia being gone. The feeling didn't go away, even after several family members tried to calm her down. But she wouldn't give up. Mm. Eventually, to put her at ease, they said fuck it, and consented to have the body examined. And to their horror, they discovered Virginia's body lying on her side, her hands badly bitten, and every possible indication that she was buried alive. So the mom's gut feeling was right. Here's a little fun fact. Remember during our Paris Catacombs episode?
Uh-huh.
Check that out if you haven't listened to it. You know where the cemetery was moved from the middle of the city into the suburbs?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Well, we didn't really talk about it, but during the move, they found hundreds of skeletons face down, which meant that people were being buried alive. And because it was in they were in total blackness, they couldn't tell what was up or down. Mm-hmm. So they just squirm around, and eventually they just end up face down because they passed out.
Yeah.
So hundreds of people were buried alive, and they found out till they were moving the cemetery. So that's one. That's one way that we know that people were being buried alive, because when you move when you move bodies from cemetery to cemetery, you'd see the state of the body. No one buries a body upside down or on the side. They bury them face up. So when you take them out, uh-huh. when you desecrate the graves and you see the body, they're face down or to the side, you're like,
oh. Wow, fucking this guy.
They're like, oof. Damn. Here's another one.
You should have pinched his titties earlier. Damn.
Here's Madame Blunden of 1896.
Madame who?
Blunden.
Blunden?
Blunden. Like London, but with a B.
Yeah, Blunden, bro. Blunden.
So I was in the second grade when I first heard the rumor that our elementary school was built on top of an old cemetery. When you were in Washington, did you hear that rumor?
That Washington was built? Yeah, it was haunted.
It really wasn't. It's just that there was a street that ran through our school. Our school was gated, so obviously no cars are going to be able to get through. But in this little stretch of street that ran through our school, there was a manhole cover. And one day, someone lifted the manhole cover, and they found the bones of a dead animal or whatever, and that's where the rumor came from. Right? So everyone was weary. No one really played around that little area where the manhole cover was.
It's a curse.
That's a curse. And there was a ton of, yo, today I heard something knocking on the cover, but obviously this was all bullshit, since there was maybe only like a foot of space between the manhole cover and the cement below it, so there's like nothing that could, you know, that could knock on it. Anyways, I say all this because how scared would you be if you were in that exact situation, but it actually happened? Because that actually fucking happened.
What?
Let me back up a bit. So when Madame Blunden, when she kicked the bucket, she was buried in her family vault at the Holy Ghost Chapel in England. The only thing was that the vault was directly beneath an all-boys school. So all-boys school was next to the cemetery, and the vault went underneath the school. Uh-huh. So there was these fucking boys. Man. So these boys were playing the day after her funeral. Everyone is aware of the vault. Everyone knows that the cemetery still goes underneath the school. So these boys were playing the day after her funeral, and during recess, when out of the depths of hell, they start to hear noises coming from the fucking vault.
Oh boy.
So after collectively shitting themselves, they ran and told the nearest teacher about the noises. The officials went down to the vault and opened the coffin just in time to see Mrs. Blunden take her last breath. They opened the vault and she was alive, and then she passed out. They tried everything in their power to try and revive her, but it was no use. She was really dead this time. During her last few moments of agony, she scratched at her face and had bitten the nails off all of her fingers. So they walked in, her face was fucked up, she had no nails, and they walked in just in time for her to take her last breath and pass the fuck out.
Damn, that went fucking dark, dude.
Hurt.
Here is a New York Times article from 1886. Woodstock, Ontario, January 18th. Recently, a girl named Collins died here, as it was supposed, very suddenly. A day or two ago, the body was exhumed prior to its removal to another burial place, when the discovery was made that the girl had been buried alive. Her shroud was torn into shreds, her knees were drawn up to her chin, one of her arms was twisted under her head, and her features bore evidence of dreadful torture. This was in the fucking newspaper, bro.
Some meadow ass newspaper.
Here's another article from the Sunday Times, 1838. A frightful case of premature interment occurred not long since in the lower garret. The victim, A man in the prime of his life had only a few shovelfuls of earth thrown into his grave when an indistinct noise was heard to proceed from his coffin. The gravedigger, terrified beyond description, instantly fled to seek assistance, and some time elapsed before his return, when the crowd, which had by this time collected in considerable numbers around the grave, insisted on the coffin being opened. As soon as the first boards had been removed, it was certain beyond a doubt that the occupant had been buried alive. His countenance was frightfully contracted with the agony he had undergone, and in his struggles, the unhappy man had forced his arms completely out of the winding sheet in which they had been securely enveloped. A physician, who was on the spot, opened the vein, but no blood flowed. The sufferer was beyond the reach of art. So this dude was being buried when he woke up, and he woke up when they were shoveling dirt on him, and the dirt that they were shoveling on him choked him to death.
Fuck. He was screaming.
Well, I don't know if he was screaming, but the dude, the gravedigger, was burying him, and then he heard a noise, and instead of helping, he booked it. Then a bunch of people started crowding around. No one did anything. Then when he came back, they're like, "You should open that," and they did. And when they opened it, they found out that he had died. But when he was burying him, the dude was still alive.
Damn, dude.
Here's one my brother might like.
What the fuck?
Mary Noah Best.
Mary knows best?
Mary Noah Best. 1871. Cause of death, drama.
Oh, for those who don't know, motherfucker, I fucking love drama. Hey, bro,
be careful what you wish for now.
So Mary Noah was 17 years old and was the adopted daughter of Mrs. Moore Chu. Mary was pronounced dead from cholera, which is death by vomiting and diarrhea.
Oh, shit.
And she was entombed in the Chu's family vault. The surgeon that pronounced her dead was a man that benefited from calling her death, as he had beef with her stepmom, or with the adopted mom, and actually tried to kill the mom a few times before, but failed.
Oh, shit. That's some sweet drama right there, bro.
But before Mary died, Mrs. Moore dipped. She's like, "Look, I gotta get out of here."
She dipped
after the surgeon tried to kill her a second time. So the surgeon tried to kill the mom a second time. She's like, "Look, I gotta go," and she left Mary behind. Mary was then put into a pine coffin and nailed shut. It wasn't until 1881, 10 years after her death, that the vault was opened again to put in Mrs. Moore's brother. When the undertaker and his assistant found the lid of Mary's coffin on the floor. So apparently, after being stuck in the vault, Mary woke up and fought with all her strength to free herself from her coffin, and was able to force the lid of her coffin off. But after opening the casket, she fainted from the strain, and while she fell forward, she cracked her head against a marble shelf, killing herself.
Well, that's
And the reason they think she died from cholera was because the surgeon who tried to kill her mom actually poisoned her.
Oh.
So to get back at the mom, he poisoned Mary, buried her alive, and threw her in the vault. And then she fought her way out of her coffin, and because she fought so hard, she kind of passed out, and she killed herself by cracking her skull on a fucking marble shelf.
Fucking man, that's a shitty way to go out.
Here's a fucked up fun fact. A fucked up fact.
I was like, it's a fucked up fun fact,
It's a fucked up funny fact, watch.
Funny?
Fucked up, but funny. So Thomas A. Kempis, right. he was a German monk who was denied saintship because they found splinters under his nails.
What?
Right? So this monk died, and then he was supposed to become a saint, but they denied it because they found splinters underneath his nails.
What is that?
What the fuck? You're like, what the fuck? Okay, here's why. Christian officials said he couldn't be made a saint because if he truly believed in God, he wouldn't have tried so hard to fight death if he really did love God. So they thought he was dead, but he was buried alive. So he tried to take himself out. They're like, no, he's not becoming a saint because if he really did love God, he wouldn't have been so scared of dying.
Man, what the fuck?
Tomfoolery. Yes.
You caught me fucked up, bro.
Here's another one. Madame Bobin, 1901.
Oh.
Fucking Bobin. So in 1901, a pregnant Miss Bobin arrived by boat to Europe from South Africa, and she was suspected of suffering from yellow fever. So she was transferred to a hospital that dealt with contagious diseases. So while she was in the hospital, she got worse and worse, where she eventually died and then was buried. After her burial, one of the nurses said she noticed her body wasn't even cold. And they actually felt her abdomen muscles move at one point. So Mrs. Bobbin's father had the body exhumed, not only to find that his daughter had been buried alive, but she also gave birth in the coffin. Both Miss Bobin and her baby were dead when her coffin was exhumed.
Oh.
Here's the last one. This one's Marguerite McCall, 1705. And this is a bonus one.
McCall.
That one.
Fucking McCall.
So this one's a bonus one because this might be more fake than true.
Okay.
So this story comes up a lot. It comes up a lot with different names and locations. But it's probably because something like this did happen somewhere at some point. But it's so old that many have made their story their own. But anyways, this is how the story goes. So the story goes like this. Marjorie got sick and was pronounced dead. After her wake, which lasted multiple days, she was buried. That same night, her body was exhumed by grave robbers. She was buried with a family ring. And when the robbers were in the middle of cutting her finger off to get the ring, Marjorie woke up screaming, scaring off the grave robbers. Marjorie then climbed out of her coffin and walked home.
Oh, wait, was it like mid-chop?
Yeah, they were mid-chop and that's what woke her up.
What? The fingers dangling? You think he took the ring?
No, they didn't take the ring. They were just like, because like, I guess they would use like a pincer to cut the fingers.
Yeah.
So while they were doing it, that's when she woke up. She screamed. The grave robbers freaked out and booked it.
I'd be fucking freaking out if that happened.
So her family was getting ready for bed when they heard a knock on the door. Marjorie's husband said aloud to her kids, "If your mother was still alive, I'd swear that was her knocking." And sure enough, when he opened the door, there she was.
Then he died.
the love of his life, dressed in her burial clothes, looking goth as fuck. So you guys are batshit crazy if you think I'm going to be talking about premature burials and cases of people being buried alive and not give you guys some tips on how to survive being buried alive. So here's some tips if you ever find yourself
being buried alive. Nah, fuck that. You got to be a monk and not be a bitch and just accept it.
What?
I'm trying to be a saint, bro.
Try to accept it right now?
I'm trying to be a saint. I'm trying to be alive. So all step
right.
One.
All right, what's step one?
You conserve your air supply. If you're buried inside a typical coffin, you have 2 hours of oxygen at most, so you gotta work fast. You take deep breaths and hold them as long as possible before exhaling. Don't breathe and then swallow, because this will lead you to start hyperventilating. And don't light a match or lighter if possible. This will burn up the little oxygen you have left. Don't yell or you'll start to panic, which will increase your heart rate, which will lead to you breathing fast, which will consume the little oxygen you have. So after you conserve your air supply, you control your breathing, you go to step two. Press up on the coffin with your hands. If you're buried alive and you are the favorite child, then you are shit out of luck, because that means you're probably buried in a hardwood coffin, which means your only chance of survival is trying to signal for help. So if you are the favorite child and you find yourself in a hardwood coffin, tap SOS with a metal object, whether it's a metal ring, your buckle, something. Tap SOS, which is 3 fast taps, 3 slow taps, and then 3 fast taps. You do it with a metal object because you're able to hear it through the 6 feet. That's SOS, right? But If you're the discarded child, then there's hope for you. Most likely, you're buried.
That's for me, baby. That's for me, baby.
So most likely, all right, so my brother. So most likely, he will be buried in a cheap pine box or recycled paperboard coffin. Damn, which will have some flex to it.
The way you say it like that, trash. Bro. I mean, I ain't no scumbag either, man. Recyclable shit, man.
It's not, I mean, it's...
because we want all right, to
well,
be
you can be buried in a shitty coffin. All
right, all right.
So if you're buried in a shitty coffin, this is what you're supposed to do. You remove your shirt. So for all of you unwanted waste space, your shirt can be used to protect you from choking from the loose dirt that will fall on you. So that's what you do. Cross your arms over your chest and then uncross your arms so that your elbows are bent and your hands are at your shoulders. Pull your shirt up and over your head from the shoulders and then you do a partial sit-up as much as you can because there's limited space. And then you pull your shirt over your head and off. Tie the bottom of the shirt in a knot. The shirt should have only one large opening at the neck like a bag. Pull the shirt over your head through the neck hole, and the knot should be on the top of your head. This makeshift mask will protect you as you climb to the surface. And then step 4, this is where you start breaking through the coffin. Start kicking the coffin with your feet. Your piece of shit coffin should already be broken or at least split from the weight of the loose dirt. Break the lid with your hands and feet and let the loose dirt rush in. Step 5, use your hands to push the dirt towards your feet. So as dirt rushes in, work fast and fill up the space at your feet with the loose dirt. What fills up, start pushing the dirt to your side. Try to control your breathing, slow breaths always. Step 6, you try and sit up. As you start to move, start to sit up. The loose dirt will move to fill the space you have just left. As the dirt falls, continue to push it into the coffin until you can stand up. So the dirt is pushing, you try to move yourself up, so all the empty space you're leaving starts getting filled. That'll make you sit up faster. Step 7, stand up. Once you are standing, you should be able to push the dirt above you and out of the grave. And then finally, step 8, you continue your list. Finish the list that you made of all the people who have wronged you, including your ex who tried to kill you 4 years ago during your wedding. And that, my friends, is being buried alive. That is scary as fuck. I think that's one of the scariest... What is scarier, dying in the ocean or being buried alive?
I'm going to say being buried alive because I don't know how long I'll be there for and be alive for versus in the ocean.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Am I just in the ocean or am I drowning?
Someone dropped you off in the middle of the ocean.
All right, so eventually you're going to drown.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. They're both scary. But I think being
it's the same thing, right? It's just one's wet, one's dry.
Yeah. Because you're in an unknown place. I mean, yeah, like you. Don't
I mean,
know.
But at least you're in the ocean, you're able to see and move around.
At least you can breathe.
You
know
what I mean? For a while. I mean, same. I mean, yeah. I don't know.
That's horrible. They're both horrible. Fuck that.
I swear, I've been in a dream tonight about this bullshit, bro.
So. That was our episode on Banshees, Grim Reapers, and Premature Burials.
All things death.
I hope you guys paid attention to that last part because I gave that's advice that some of you will need. And some of you are going to be buried alive. What? One of us three will eventually get buried alive. I'm looking at you, Hachi.
What are you trying to say?
Imagine you being cremated alive. You wake up when they just throw you in the goddamn fucking...
You wake up just to be put to sleep real fast?
You just hear 1, 2, 3, and they chuck you in there.
Fuck all that. But, yeah, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Try not to... if you guys... Remember, try not to die, first Please of all. Try not to die.
Don't do that.
Try not to die.
Step 1, try not to die.
Try not to die.
Try.
Yeah.
You know, try not to die. Yeah. And if you are buried alive, SOS. Remember, three fast taps, three slow taps, and then three fast taps. Tick, tick, tick. And if not, rewind this 10 minutes and listen to the step by step instructions on how to get the fuck out if you are the least liked child in your family. So, if no one has anything else to add, you guys can add us on Instagram, Weird History, Irritables Pod. You guys there. You guys can find all the bullshit we talk about through all our episodes. You guys could rate and review us on iTunes. We're also on Spotify. And if nobody has anything else to add.
No.
No.
Nope, 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 nope. Thank you guys. And as always, we are the Weird History, Irritables Pod.